Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of News Bites. I'm news anchor David James, and this is a special report on how to detect a lie. Well, folks, a lot of things happening. And remember I told you about the movie that I had seen called True Romance? And especially we spoke about the Sicilian scene. Well, in that scene, he talks about the fact that Sicilians are great liars. He said they're the best in the world. I'll read it to you in a few secs here. But he said he could detect the 17 different things a guy can do when he lies, that gives himself away. And I thought I'd share that with you in this edition of News Bites. So, in the film, Slater, a comic book store manager, meets Arquette, a hooker, in the movie theater. They fall in love and get married, and he goes to her pimp, Oldman, who just happens to be white, with gold teeth and braids, blonde braids. Oldman, a Jew name, though, right? And he talks like he's a Negro. So he goes there to collect her personal belongings, and he gets into a huge fight with this pimp and his Negro thug, Minion. Slater grabs some suitcases and goes home. He discovers that one suitcase contains a lot of bagged white powder. Cocaine. The couple stops to see Slater's dad, who is played by Dennis Hopper, to borrow some traveling money. Then rushes off to L.A. to sell the drugs and enjoy a honeymoon. I mean, it sure is a moral plot here. Let me tell you something about this movie. Every character in the movie is a scumbag, criminal. And this fellow says that he loves this movie and looks forward to seeing it again and all this stuff. So he loves a society that's full of losers and criminals. I'm telling you, I don't think there was one just person in this film. I'm serious. I know that sounds a little outlandish to you, but if you've seen this movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. So, in the next scene, this is the one I had you see. It's called the Sicilian scene. Mafia capo Walken arrives with a crew at Hopper's trailer and asks Slater's whereabouts. It seems that Oldman had taken Slater's driver's license before Slater killed him, and Slater had left it at the crime scene. After tying up Hopper, Walken inquires about Slater's and Arquette's whereabouts and destination. Hopper denies knowing anything, whereupon Walken says to Hopper, well, before I go into that, Walken says he's the Antichrist. He says, do you know who I am? And he says, I'm the Antichrist. And he's sitting at the table with Dennis Hopper, who plays the father. He tells him that his son was so stupid that he left when he killed the thug and his pimp friend that he left his license in his hand, but I remember his license being put up on a light. So I don't know where Walken came up with that, but I think that was incorrect. But it doesn't matter. It wasn't in his hand as far as I remember. So he sits down at the table. He tells him he's the Antichrist. Wants to know where he is. He says he hadn't seen him. He lied to him. And after he lied to him, he gave him a good sock in the face, if I remember correctly, and he was bleeding. And he says, it's never going to get as good as that is right there. He says, it's going to get worse. In other words, each time he has to beat on him, it's going to get much worse than that. So he sits down and he said, you know, I'm a Sicilian. He said, Sicilians are great liars. The best in the world, he said. I'm a Sicilian. My father was the world heavyweight champion of Sicilian liars. From growing up with him, I learned the pantomime. He says, you see, there are 17 different things a guy can do when he lies to give himself away. A guy's got 17 pantomimes. A woman's got 20, but a guy's got 17, he says. But if you know them like you know your own face, they beat lie detectors all to hell. Now, what we got here is a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, and you're telling me everything. I know you know where they are. So tell me before I do some damage you won't walk away from. So, that scene was quite something else. This is the scene where he tells him, he realizes he's going to be killed. So, you know, Walken says, would you like a Chesterfield? Trying to romanticize, you know, some old brand of cigarettes, you know what I mean? And, basically, he declined, I'm not going to have one. But then after he didn't tell him what he wanted to hear, and he looked at him real close, and he could tell that he lied to him again, he had the guy behind him slice his palm of his hand wide open, then poured alcohol on it. And then somebody from one of the crew in behind the Christopher Walken throws him a towel to hopefully stop the bleeding. In other words, it's getting worse every time he lies, right? So at this point, he realizes, that's it. I know I'm screwed, basically. So he says, do you mind if I have that cigarette now? I'll take that Chesterfield now. Do you mind? So he gives him a Chesterfield. And he says, tells him about how he studies history. And he says, you know, all this stuff about how, you know how the scene goes. He tells him about how the Moors came down to Sicily. And they did a lot of effing, if you know what I mean. Excuse the vulgar term, but I mean, hey, you know. In other words, they had a lot of sex with the Sicilian women. And he said, the Moors are niggers. And he told him that he made the Sicilians so that they have nigger blood running through them. He called them an eggplant. That's what the Italians call blacks. They call them Moulinians. Moulis. Which just means black because of eggplant is black. That's all it means. Just like nigger means black, just like negro means black. You've heard it all. You've heard it all before. So eventually he says, your great-great-grandmother, she did it with a nigger. And she had a little half-nigger boy. And he says, eventually he turns it around to Walken and he says, well, what does that make you? He says, you're an eggplant. And basically, Walken tries to laugh it all off and he's saying, I like this guy. I love this guy. He's laughing and everything. And the crew is kind of stunned because, of course, they're also Sicilians and they're finding out they got Negro blood running through them. And as I mentioned before, of course, the movie didn't tell them that they have Jew blood running through them, you see. So he gets up, turns around, he's still laughing and everything, and he gets a gun from one of the fellas, turns around, and blows Dennis Hopper away. Dennis Hopper knew it was coming, you see. And he spit on him and everything else because he didn't like what he had to say. He didn't like the truth, you see. Here's a man that knew how to detect lies, but he didn't like hearing the truth. Only when he wanted to hear the truth does he want to hear the truth. So it says here, according to WordWeb, pantomime means a performance using gestures and body movements without words. It seems to me that all good lawyers and students of the law should know these pantomimes by heart. It really can help when interrogating witnesses. In fact, it can help anyone when interacting with people in general. So what are these pantomimes? Now I'm reading from a blog here, so it doesn't really matter whose blog it is. It's just, we're going to get to the meat of the situation in a minute. But he says, before I get into the answer of what are these pantomimes, I'd like to point out that I consider all lie detecting techniques a highly subjective art form. During an actual interrogation, one might want to tell the subject something similar to what Walken said about the pantomimes and let the subject know that his reaction to the interrogation has already revealed some of them. This might just demoralize the subject sufficiently to get the subject to start telling the truth. I did a little digging and came up with the liar pantomimes below. To interpret the pantomimes with greatest accuracy, observe the key behavior of the liar within the first 5 seconds after a stimulus such as asking a question. Now, why am I reporting this to you? Because every day of your life, you interact with people. Every day you watch these so-called fake news programs. And they are what they're so-called. They are fake news. And you have people that lie to you. But what do you have to detect such things? How can you tell when they're lying? So we can also use this, though you're not a police officer, you're not a detective or a governmental fake. You can use this to your advantage, and I suggest that you learn these, just like I'm going to learn them. Also remember that you can most easily detect liar pantomimes if you know how the subject behaves during normal conversation before beginning the interrogation. In other words, soften the subject up Put the subject at ease and notice how the subject normally acts in pleasant conversation. Then when you discern any differences during interrogation, those differences constitute clues that the subject might want to hide the truth. Incidentally, I believe Tarantino made up that nonsense about women having 20 pantomimes and men only having 17. As you will see, I found more than a score. And some I could subdivide even more. So he's saying he found more than 20. Liar pantomimes. Now here's where you want to pay attention to what I'm telling you. Here's where you don't want to drift off and start thinking about something else. This is where you will learn what's important to know. And one must pay attention in order to learn. You need to listen to what I'm telling you, and you need to remember. See, some things that you let go through your mind, you deliberately don't mark them in your brain, let's say, as you would bookmark something. I suggest you bookmark these in your mind for good. Number one, a liar will limit or stiffen physical expression with few arm and hand movements. The liar will move hand, arm, and leg toward his own body in order to take up less space and become harder to see. I want you to know something that I've seen this recently. I've been reading more about the Beatles, and I have noticed Paul McCartney always is, you know, touching his nose while he's answering questions and touching his chin and different things, just like it said right here. The liar will move the hand, arm, and leg toward his own body in order to take up less space and become harder to see. Is that a proof he's lying? Not necessarily, but like this fellow in this blog says here, if you do know how they act normally, you'd be able to tell the difference when they're being questioned. And I'm going to tell you, Paul McCartney was on the, I can't think of that Jews show. It's a nightly show with a snide Jew. Anyway, he asked him about being dead. And Paul looked awful guilty. He touched his nose while he was talking. He kept pointing to his chin and touching his chin while he was talking, just like this says. And then he said something very interesting and about him being the guy who is the replacement. And he knew he said something wrong, and when he looked at the camera, you could see in his eyes something's wrong here. Okay, let's pay attention again. Number two, a liar will avoid making eye contact with you when lying to you. While the liar may have no ability to hold a gaze for any length of time, a sociopath liar might look you in the eyes without difficulty for a long time. Like a Jew? Of course, Jews don't like to look us in the eye in the first place, never mind while lying. So again, a liar will avoid making eye contact with you when lying to you. Number three, a liar tends to touch the face, throat, and mouth. Here it is again, Paul McCartney. And touch or scratch the nose, that's what he did, and behind the ear. Listen again. A liar tends to touch the face, throat, and mouth, and touch or scratch the nose or behind the ear. A liar will not likely touch the chest, forward/heart with an open hand. A liar will not likely touch the chest or heart with an open hand. How about those football players that don't want to stand up with their hands? The liar covers the mouth as if to cover the lie. Now, isn't that interesting? Because the mouth was the organ used to sin by lying, right? Well, Adam and Eve, they didn't cover their mouths like they ate something. That was the organ that you were told. They still tell you it's an apple today. They still try to tell you that the devil used an apple to, and people still believe it and fall for it. They covered their genitals. That ought to tell you everything. Number four. A liar botches the timing between emotions, gestures, expressions, and words. Did you hear that? A liar botches the timing between emotions, gestures, expressions, and words. Example, someone says, "I love it," when receiving a gift, and then smiles after making the statement, rather than at the same time the statement is made. Number five, gestures, expressions don't match the verbal statement, such as frowning when saying, "I love you." Micro expressions may flash on the liar's face that do not comport with the liar's verbal responses. Number six, the liar limits expressions to mouth movements instead of using the whole face when faking emotions like happy, surprised, sad, or awe. Normally, a non-liar involves the whole face when expressing emotion. Jaw, cheek movement, eyes and forehead, push down, etc. So he says that liars limit expressions to mouth movements instead of using the whole face. Number seven. A guilty person gets defensive. An innocent person will often go on the offensive. Or, the accused may become the accuser by pointing the finger and projecting the misdeed elsewhere. The liar may overreact by immediately behaving angry and defensive. Perhaps try to force a change of subject, or to make the interrogator submit to the liar's story. Does that sound like the Holocaust to you? Listen, when you tell the Jew the truth about the Holocaust, listen to this. What happens? The liar may overreact by immediately behaving angry and defensive, perhaps trying to force a change of subject, or try to make the interrogator submit to the liar's story. I just saw that with John McCain. Somebody asked him if he was ever going to deal righteously with Trump, something to that effect. And John McCain immediately went crazy, became angry, and he said, "How could you ask a question like that? How could you ask a, you know, like," and he tried to, you know, intimidate him and submit to what he was telling him. Number eight, a liar feels and acts uncomfortable facing his questioner or accuser, and may turn his head or body away. The liar may fidget a lot and generally look uncomfortable. Uncomfortable. Have you seen that in your life? Are you paying attention to me still? A liar feels and acts uncomfortable facing his questioner or accuser and may turn his head or body away. The liar may fidget a lot and generally look uncomfortable. Number 9. A liar might unconsciously place objects, book, coffee cup, etc., between himself and the interrogator. Number 10. A liar will use the interrogator's words to make the answer to the question. When asked, "Did you eat the last cookie?" The liar answers, "No, I did not eat the last cookie," or, "Are you asking me if I ate that cookie?" Still paying attention, I hope? Number 11. A statement without a contradiction has less likelihood of truthful content. Excuse me. Let me correct that. A statement. Are you listening now? Good. A statement without a contraction has less likelihood of truthful content. "I didn't do it" implies greater truth than "I did not do it." Very interesting. Number 12. Liars sometimes avoid lying by not making direct statements. They imply answers instead of denying something directly. That would be Mr. Bill Clinton. Again, we see this with the politicians. We see this with people that are being questioned about things like the Federal Reserve, etc., etc., etc. What they do is they'll try to change the subject and they refuse to answer the question, no matter how many times it's asked. So again, number 12, liars sometimes avoid lying by not making direct statements. They imply answers instead of denying something directly. I will also point out that you must realize that when you don't tell the whole truth, and that is what happens many a time in this world, you are actually leaving out the important parts of the truth. You are actually lying because you didn't tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. See, the whole truth, not half of the truth. Half of the truth would be a lie because it is not telling the whole truth. Number 13, the guilty person may speak more than normally, adding unnecessary details to convince the interrogator. The liar feels uncomfortable with silence or pauses in the conversation. The liar may start talking way too fast or completely change the pitch or tone of voice. Number 14. A liar may leave out pronouns and speak in a monotonous tone. Or monotonous. In a truthful statement, the liar will emphasize the pronoun as much or more than the rest of the words in the statement. Aha. Get that? So either they'll leave out the pronouns and speak in a monotonous tone, Or in a truthful statement, the liar will emphasize the pronoun as much as or more than the rest of the words in the statement. Number 15. A liar may garble words or speak them softly and make errors in grammar and syntax. In other words, the liar will muddle sentences rather than emphasize them. Number 16. A liar will feel a desire to leave the area so as to escape further notice or scrutiny, and may look towards possible escape routes or fabricate an excuse like, "I have to go to the bathroom again." Let me read that again now. A liar will feel a desire to leave the area so as to escape further notice or scrutiny, and may look toward possible escape routes or fabricate an excuse like, "I have to go to the bathroom again." Number 17. A liar will often exhibit different mannerisms while lying than during normal conversation. Different mannerisms. Any slight changes can have significance. For example, a person trying to remember a detail might normally look upward, but look downward when lying. I'd probably say that they would even look away deliberately when lying. A liar, this is number 18, a liar will willingly and with relief change the subject, while a non-liar would try to return to the original subject. You see, there's Bill Clinton again. A liar will willingly, he's just one example. A liar will willingly and with relief change the subject, while a non-liar would try to return to the original subject. I noticed that with Tucker Carlson, that when he's asking these Jews and these Negroes and these students and these feminists questions, they don't want to answer the question. And he keeps returning to the original question, and they keep trying to not answer it and dance around it in every way they possibly can. It also says a liar may avoid the subject by making sarcastic or humorous remarks. Number 19. A liar tends to blink frequently as though unconsciously hiding thoughts, but revealing them instead. But note here that some people blink a lot normally when not lying. That's why it's important to know how they speak regularly and see if there's a difference when they begin to be questioned. Number 20. The liar's eyebrows become raised. This by itself does not prove lying, but it tends to signify defensiveness. The raising of the eyebrows, okay? So in other words, it does not prove somebody's lying by itself. Because, I mean, you could just raise your eyebrows and that's like questioning something, saying, hey, yeah? But it tends to signify defensiveness. A liar aware of the tendency to blink a lot may raise his eyebrows in order to compensate. People seem to have trouble avoiding this indicator to lying. Number 21. The liar may play dumb. What are you talking about? Or why would you say that? And of course, looking appropriately shocked and confused. Number 22, the liar, needing more time to think, may stammer and pause in between comments, as if trying to gather thoughts. Look for a subtle thinking time delay between the asking the question, the asking of the question, and obtaining the answer. The delay can suggest lying. And number 23, the liar may sweat more than normal during questioning. Now, funny that this ended up with 23. That's half of 46. And you say, well, what does that mean, Dave? What are you talking about? Well, you've got two strands of DNA, and there's 23 chromosomes in each. That's why that's one of the big numbers that you'll see over and over and over and over and over again. Just pointing it out. So it says, I'd love to give proper credit to the tireless researchers in homes, businesses, universities, interrogation rooms, and laboratories throughout the world who studied human behavior and documented these liar tells. But frankly, I don't feel the urge to research that. I remind you that legendary humorist Mark Twain once said, three kinds of liars exist. Liars, damned liars, and statistics. You may want to read my article on the subject here, he says. And so, ladies and gentlemen, there's your report. And let this be something that you listen to several times. I know I will. And solidify this in your brain. It'll be a tool that you can use for the rest of your life. Let it not be something that you overuse and overthink to the point where you're destroying your whole life by it either. It's a tool to be used in moderation and with wisdom and understanding. Don't just go out there and start saying, well, you looked at your coffee cup while you were answering my question, so you must be a liar. I mean, you get a little ridiculous, right? Let's use our brains. This has been a News Bites special report. And until next time, smarten up and don't look down at your coffee cup.